So your story starts on this farm in Parkersburg, West Virginia. It's right next to a landfill for DuPont's huge Washington Works chemical plant, which is right nearby, and it's the late 90s. And we see corporate defense lawyer Rob Bellott watching this home video on a VHS that the farmer there, Wilbur Tennant, has taken of all of these cows on his property that he says have gotten sick from drinking the creek water running out of the landfill nearby. So I want to play a little piece of that video, actually. Here's Wilbur looking at all these cows with different ailments, cloudy eyes, humpbacks, hair falling out, and things like that.
How poor she is up there in the back, sunk in back there, you hang a hat there on them hindquarters. I never had cattle look like this before.
And he goes on to say he's lost more than 150 cows like that since DuPont started using the land nearby. So tell me what Rob Bellott found out was going on.
He found out that DuPont was dumping something mysterious into the landfill right next to the tenant's farm's site. And he couldn't figure out what it was for a very long time because DuPont and all of the documentation that they gave to the lawyer, Rob Bellott, mentioned nothing that seemed out of the ordinary. And as he did more research and went through thousands and thousands of documents, he found a single mention of a chemical that he had never heard of in all his career doing defense work for chemical companies. And that was something called PFOA, which also DuPont refers to as C8. And it's a man-made substance that's used in the manufacturing of Teflon. And the DuPont plant nearby was made Teflon. And there's no scientific literature that he could find about this substance, but he started to investigate further and started to see some pretty incredibly damning things as he dug.
Yeah, there's this incredible moment where he finally gets DuPont to hand over basically their entire corporate history related to this chemical, and sort of there's this moment where he realizes that he's working with a lot more incriminating stuff here than he thinks they maybe realized they were handing over to him.
Yeah, I mean, he then asked DuPont for everything that they had, every document they had relating to the substance PFOA, and they refused to do so, and he had to get a court order to compel them. And then they finally sent something like 110,000 pages of documents about it. And to his surprise, to his shock, he realized that this was not some obscure substance that was rarely used, but in fact, they had been using it for more than 50 years, that they bought it from the company 3M, that they've been conducting secret health studies about it for decades, and they had known as early as the 50s and the 60s that it caused cancer in lab animals, that it caused birth defects in the children of female workers at the plant, that it had all number of horrible health effects, that had entered the drinking water in the community. He found that it had entered the bloodstream of the factory workers, and he even discovered that it was detected in blood banks in America, that it had entered the blood of the general population. And in fact, it is, it is in our blood. It is in the blood of every person alive at this point. And he also realized that they knew they were dumping it in massive quantities into this landfill. So once he told DuPont that he knew all of that, they settled the case. But for Rob, it was really just the beginning.
Yeah, so then fast forward to after that first settlement with the EPA, we have this class action suit that's going on now. And this does it stretch pretty far beyond West Virginia, the actual plaintiffs in that suit, or are they just sort of the representative sample?
Well, then, I mean, what happened is they realized that it was in the drinking water in extremely high levels in the six water districts. It's actually more than that, but six were included in the original lawsuit in 2000. And that all of these people had been drinking it, many for decades, and they were now dying from it or having a number of horrible health conditions. So Mr. Bellott started the class action suit, and the second phase of the suit has now begun. This is 15 years into this litigation, extraordinarily complex tendentious litigation, where everybody in the area who drinks the water, who has one of the health conditions that has been linked to PFOA, is now able to file a suit, a personal injury suit against DuPont. And so far, roughly 3,500 people have come forward to do so, who are sick out of a population of 70,000 who've been drinking the contaminated water. And so they're all people within these six water districts around the factory. And the first case has been decided, and there are now, 3,500 more.
Yeah. And while I wanted to ask about the regulations, one thing you mentioned in your story is that you said 15 years, in the making here, and DuPont has stopped manufacturing PFOA, but of course replaces it with whatever other chemical they claim is safe that they need to use in its place. And the regulations really on a national and certainly on a state level don't really seem to have caught up to, putting more controls on all of these unregulated chemicals to keep this kind of thing from happening in future. I mean, do you feel like the case has had much of an impact in that way?
Yeah, I mean, the real story here is there's no regulation at all of chemicals, period. TSCA, the Toxic Substances Act, was passed in 1976, and that created a kind of regulatory framework for the first time that EPA could use to regulate these chemicals that our society's awash in. There's now something like 80,000 chemicals on the market. Since TSCA, the EPA has regulated five out of that number. So PFOA is not one of the five, and they're now debating after, Bilott, 15 years after Bilott brought this to the EPA's attention with a letter, and he continues to hound them over this time. They are now on the verge, they claim, of issuing something called a health advisory, which is not binding in any way, and I think compels no action even. But even to get to this kind of statement about the safety of this stuff, even after all the science has been done through this lawsuit, it still hasn't happened. And this is, yes, this is one chemical of tens of thousands. We don't know, what they do, most of them do. And we interact with them every day. I think the figure is that men ingest 85 man-made chemicals a day, and women, it's about twice that due to cosmetics, primarily, I believe. And so, yeah, there's no regulation. Nobody really understands how these things work and what their health consequences are. And probably most of them are safe, but we're in a situation where we kind of just hope the chemical companies who are responsible for regulating themselves essentially are doing the right thing. And we hope that their number one motive is not profit, but making sure that we're safe. But I don't think capitalism really works that way.
Yeah, which, that brings us back to DuPont. And actually, just months before this first plaintiff went to trial, they spun off their chemical division into what Delawareans now know as Chemours. So tell me what your sources are telling you, what the implications of that could be for this case.
Yeah, so the whole chemical division, DuPont's whole chemical division, which includes the Teflon manufacturing, was spun off last year as its own company called Chemours, sort of faintly European sounding, foreign sounding name. And that DuPont plant in West Virginia that I wrote about is actually a Chemours plant. And when I talked to DuPont for the story, they said, well, really, you shouldn't be asking us these questions. You need to talk to Chemours. They're the ones who manufacture the stuff. Of course, Chemours hadn't existed until a few months earlier. And there's deep concern on the plaintiff side that this spinoff is a way to minimize liability, that in the case that they're held liable for an enormous amount of money, there's concern that Chemours might simply go bankrupt and avoid having to pay these people, and DuPont would be insulated from that. Now, DuPont insists that that's not the case, that they continue to hold liability, but they they have some of the best lawyers in the business working on this, and they're also undergoing a merger with Dow Chemical. So there's a lot of uncertainty about how that will play out.
And meanwhile, you mentioned the poisoning of the general population. Your story kind of lists all of the affected people or the potentially affected people in every state. And you note that Wilmington is one of the cities that has sort of a higher concentration as far as number of people affected for the size of the area and things like that. 320,000 people in Newcastle County. I mean, what does that actually mean for those people? Like, where is this stuff coming from? And what do we know what kind of health effects they could have from the levels they are ingesting?
Well, I don't know where it's coming from in that county. But I mean, I know that it's going to the into the bodies of the people who work at DuPont's corporate headquarters if they're drinking water or, you know, washing with it, presumably. And so there is this deep irony that the decisions that are made and have been made over the last 60 years to continue using this stuff despite the science that they had, the internal science that they were doing, despite 3M's decision to phase it out in 2003, DuPont, instead of switching over to an alternative, built a new factory and started making it itself. And so there is an irony in the fact that the decisions made at corporate headquarters are damaging on some level the people who made them and their families and descendants. But it's not, you know, it's we know it's in the drinking water in all of these places. It's in the drinking water in fairly high concentrations in some of them, as I think is the case in Wilmington or and in Delaware. But it's also it's in our bloodstream. It's also in the blood of every animal on the planet that's been tested for it, including polar bears in the Arctic. And I think at some point it was determined. Mr. Bilal was telling me that in one of the internal documents, I didn't get into this in the article, that there was a provisional kind of safety limit for PFOA in human blood that EPA was aware of, you know, in the early 2000s after Bilal turned over this information to him. And it was subsequently discovered that it was in human blood in higher concentrations already across the world. And so then there's this question of, well, is every human being on the planet now able to, you know, sue, have grounds to sue DuPont? And, you know, at that point, I think EPA essentially backed off and threw up their hands because there was nothing to do. But there's a great anxiety about what kind of effect this is happening, whether this has some responsibility for higher cancer rates globally. But the main truth is that there's just there's so much vagueness about all of this, and because the regulatory agencies responsible for doing this work really haven't done much of it and aren't empowered to do much of it.
Yeah, and the irony you mentioned brings to mind there was a letter to the editor in response to your story in the New York Times Magazine from a person who received treatment from Nemours DuPont Children's Hospital as a child and then kind of grew up to see the environmental effects of some DuPont chemicals and read your story and was, you know, moved by Rob Bilal's work and asks the question, you know, how do we reckon with a company that, for people in Delaware and in other places, you know, seems to have done so much good, and Delawareans are really tied to this company compared with the evil they seem to have done. I mean, how would you say we should sort of deal with that as residents of the state that DuPont has called home for so long?
Well, there's huge amount of loyalty in Parkersburg, you know, to DuPont, to the point where the few people who spoke out against them and these farmers when they started this lawsuit were intimidated and bullied and threatened by their people who are their friend, lifelong friends in the community. They're worried that you know, there's a sense of omerta there. But I don't think that loyalty goes both ways. I mean, you've seen now as DuPont's preparing to merge with Dow Chemical, they've laid off something like 10% of their workers in Parkersburg. And I think they are in line to lay off a lot more. And, you know, I don't think it should surprise anyone that a huge multinational corporation may not feel the same level of loyalty to the people they employ at one factory as those people might feel towards the company. So I think it's always a bad thing when a single industry or a single company can dominate a local economy. I think it warps people's understanding of how some of this stuff works. And I think the people in Parkersburg who have been very loyal to the company and generally have been treated well by it, I think are beginning to feel very bitter, and they have felt very bitter and betrayed once they realized that this company that they had pledged their loyalty to and defended was in fact poisoning them and killing, you know, them and their family in various ways through this chemical.